Hello and welcome to this look at the first half of the Slovenian Prva Liga season. As is traditional at this time of year, when the leagues close up for the winter, we come out and talk about them. And why not? Why not? It's because I was actually advised on Twitter I should wait and do it at the end of the winter break when we can talk about transfers as well. But what will actually happen is I'll end up doing both. And that way, I get two podcasts, two bits of content out to you for zero original thoughts. And really, there's little more I can ask for in this life than that. Today, we are focusing, of course, on the Slovenian Prva Liga. I think I possibly might do something else at the end as well. But the Prva Liga finished up this past weekend. And it is a league very much of two halves. We have had some eventfulness after already, with Maribor confirming that their previously interim manager in Radovan Karanovic is now permanent, with Olympia coming out and confirming that they'll be announcing their new vision for the future at the start of the next year. So yeah, New Year's resolutions not to be an absolutely crazy club is going to be coming out there. And Celje have not quite parted ways with Simon Seslar. He is apparently remaining at the club, just not in the head coach role. There's a couple of rumours about that. We'll talk about them now because we're going to start off with looking at the bottom five clubs. We're not going to go through this in 10th to 1st, purely because the league itself is actually quite nicely divided between the top five and the bottom five. So it makes sense really to discuss them all as a group. Plus it means I can go on a bit longer about Celje because I have a lot of thoughts about them. So if we start with the bottom five, first of all, we have three teams on 19 points, Radomlje, Alumini and Tabor Sedana. Radomlje are bottom, Alumini are ninth, one goal better off on goal difference. Tabor Sedana, an extra 7 goals better off on goal difference. Then in 7th we have Celje, 3 points ahead of those three. And Domžale in 6th, 1 further point up. Now, as those of you who listen to this podcast quite a bit, if you listen to the season preview, you will note that I was extremely high on the prospects of Celje. And Celje are 7th. The last 5 games in the lead up to the break were 4 defeats and 1 draw. And yeah, they're having a bit of a mare. It's fair to say, given we are halfway through the season and they're already looking for manager number 3. Now, I am going to make the argument that my faith in them wasn't entirely misplaced. If we go on to the advanced stats, we'll note Celje have scored so far this season 21 goals. Celje's XG is 32, meaning there's an 11 goal disparity there, which is quite big. And the reason for that is pretty obvious as well when you look at it. You have no real goal producers. The most effective attacking player is Ivan Bosic, who isn't an out-and-out striker by any means. You know, the title-winning side used him on the right wing. And, you know, that's what he was doing most of last season too. He's been forced to have a more central role this season. He is delivering the goods. You know, he has had some brilliant performances, but that's not his wheelhouse. The players whom they brought in, whose wheelhouse that was meant to be, haven't performed. Now, chief among those, this possibly might be being a little bit harsh, is Zam Medved. Now, the reason I state that that's possibly being a little bit harsh is because I think, you know, when you actually are watching the games, he gets himself in the right positions, gets himself in good areas, good movement, doesn't score. He's doing 95% of the job right, but the 5% is quite big. Then, you know, outside of those two, you have Adam Jakobsen, who came in from the Danish leagues, really quite unheralded. I think he's played a greater role than I would have expected him to, particularly when you consider that him playing has put on the bench Luka Karin, you know, obviously part of the title winning side, and I think, you know, very much a known quantity and a known quality quantity at this level, and Miko Kuzmanovic, who was probably the real bright spark of last season. You have, you know, a few depth players there as well, obviously at least Esther Sokler, but you know, you can sort of see why Celje haven't performed just by having that little think about their attacking lineup, because there hasn't really been much in the way of consistency, and because there hasn't been much in the way of consistency, there hasn't been much in the way of form. You know, you have two players in Karina and Kuzmanovic who have been an integral part of the side over each of the past two seasons, neither of whom are actually playing part in this side because they've been pushed aside for Jakobsen, which, you know, okay, Jakobsen, I think, let's say, is better than expected, but, you know, they're keeping on getting players they can actually build something around and just sort of putting them to the wayside for a new thing. Now, obviously, because, you know, they are creating stuff, you know, there are some really good positives about the side. You know, not least Tamar Svetlin, obviously came in quite heralded from Domžal, and I think he has hit the ground running and performed very well. Čas Begić, who came in from Gorica, a little bit maybe less so, but again, you're talking about an 18-year-old there, and you have to temper your expectations of him a little bit. The same rotation, to put a term to it that's definitely the wrong word, issues are at the back as well. You know, again, they've got some talented players in there. You know, we've seen David Zec come back to Slovenia. He's been all right. He has had a couple of very shaky moments. But, you know, you've also seen issues with, for example, Ivan Kadasic not playing all that much. And the same applies for Dejan Mrandići. Now, again, that's two players who were a pretty important part of the side that won the title. And when you start thinking, well, okay, you have still a decent amount of parts within the squad who won the title with a very good defensive record at the side, still there, but they're sort of being sidelined. And I think the best we've seen of Celje since they won the title was in that last gasp of last season, under the first couple of bits of Agron Salia, where they really went back to basics. I'm not saying that Celje need to go back to basics, but they need to find a mix, because they have far too much talent there to be languishing in seventh and, you know, going into the winter with an actual risk of being relegated. They are in an interesting position. The names I've seen linked to the job so far have been Simon Rosman. That's quite a strong link, it's fair to say. That would be interesting, given obviously he did okay at Maribor, but you know, I think he wanted to put in an ambitious project there and it just didn't really work. At Celje, I think there probably would be a bit more of a marriage between the vision of the owners and the vision of the manager. They've also been linked to the manager of Posušje in the Bosnian League, and that person's name escapes me at the moment, which is irritating because I read it on Nogomania literally half an hour ago, Stipe Bilajic. But I think Rosman is very much the favourite. We'll see. That'll be one we'll update you on come the actual end of the winter break podcast. As I say, two podcasts, zero original content. That's how I like to work. In terms of the other side, who you probably wouldn't expect so much to be there, it's obviously Domžale. Now, Domžale to me are very in an interesting situation. You have Celje, who are in the bottom five and really shouldn't be, and you have Domžale, who are sort of they're going along, but they're the ones who could have a redirection of form to the negative, whereas Celje really should be reverting it to the positive. Now, the reasoning for that is that I think their side is weaker than they started the season with. Obviously, Tamás Svetlín left after the start of the season. Dario Kolarbaric left late in the transfer window, going to Shakhtar Soligorsk. I would expect Arnel Jakubovic to also go somewhere over the winter. I think he's too good to not do that. You have issues defensively. They do concede quite a few goals, and that's even with Aydin Milalić in goals for all this autumn. He has been very good. As soon as the autumn series ended, he's gone in for knee surgery. Now, the idea is that he will be back prior to the resumption of football, but that does obviously raise doubts about quite how hardy he is, and quite how much he'll be able to contribute in the second half of the season. His backup will be Gregor Sorchan, who, Gregor Sorchan, if you go back 3 years to him at Gorica, was, really a very highly rated goalkeeper. He is, in 2021/2022, a inconsistent goalkeeper that doesn't have much in the way of confidence, because the past couple of years, from him moving to Domžale initially and having a really terrible season, then going back to Gorica last year and having some real consistency issues. I think that there's reason to be worried. The saving grace, as always, for Domžale is Senija Dibačić. He is ageless. I saw someone quote that Luka Modric is aging in reverse. Ibrahimović is aging in reverse as well. He is 36 now. Obviously, he was, I think, officially the player of the season in the league last year. He has certainly shown some glimpses of that this year. I don't think he's shown it as consistently as he did last year. And that would be a bit of a worry, because, he is the one player in the squad that's there who is still a class above, really, this league. And if he eventually succumbs to the whims of Mother Time, then Domžale really would be in trouble. It might not necessarily be an issue this season. I think possibly they've got enough about them, or they've done enough already, or as we'll discuss with the other three sides, I think the others in the bottom five are possibly too close together to really pull Domžale into too much trouble. But I think, they're 4 points away from the bottom three, albeit with a game in hand, but that is against Olympia. I think there's the potential for them to be drawn into it. I think they'll be safe. I think there's the potential for them to be drawn into a relegation battle. The other three at the bottom are, of course, Tavos Zuzana, Alumni, and Radomni. We mentioned Celje earlier, so let's talk about Celje's former manager, Dusan Kosic, at Tavos Zuzana, who will be looking on the winter with a very different outlook now that they ended the period with a win. Because there haven't been very many of those for them this season, which is unusual given that they have a natural advantage in that their home stadium, Rey Costolfa, is basically a five-a-side pitch in size. Now, that isn't too unfair a characterisation of the place. What Kostić has done has made the side better defensively. He has the security of the contract to 2023, so you know, there's an acceptance there at the club that they're buying into a project with him. But the form hasn't been great. You know, the autumn ending win of Celje came after 7 straight losses and 10 without a win. But when you actually sort of go into the results, well, only one of those defeats was by more than one goal, which is pretty good. Really, you know, it sort of shows that Tabasozana aren't far off it. The issue they have is scoring goals, but that's the sort of issue you probably expect when you hire a guy who won a title from through a very impressive defensive display and having counter-attacking skills, rather than someone who's naturally, you know, an attacking, flashy manager. He also hasn't had the benefit of having a transfer window to actually add firepower to the side. You know, they have one reliable striker in Dino Stančić, but that's it. You know, Rodrigue Bongonguí came back to the club, but has sort of proven to be a bit of a luxury player. So what they need is basically a supporting cast to create and you know, actually give more chances for Stančić to put away more than anything. I don't think it's necessarily a striking issue. I do think it's a creativity issue. But it's hard not to have faith in Kostić. And you know, I'd much rather be at a side in a relegation battle that has its defence sorted and not its attack than being at a side in a relegation battle that's the other way around. Speaking of a side in the defensive battle that's the other way round, Radomlje. Now, if nothing else, Radomlje have given us the goal of the season. Gedeon Gazina's chest and bicycle kick against Celje. FIFA, if you're listening, that's a 2022 Puskás contender. You need to put that in the voting now. It is genuinely one of the best goals I have ever seen anywhere. Radomlje, I think, came in as a reasonably weak promoted side. They have had one very bad run of 7 losses in a row through August and early September. But the rest of the season, they've actually been fine. You know, I think their transfer business was really good. You know, obviously, we've mentioned Gedeon Gazima. You know, quite aside from scoring wonder goals, he's a goal or an assist every other game, which is sort of production you really want to have at a promoted side. Marko Bozic, so he came in from Austria Vienna, he's impressed as well. They have young players in Andrej Pogačar and Mark Stepkovnik, who have both, you know, kicked on for going up to a higher level. I don't think they are quite there yet. I think they do have defensive issues, you know. In a league like the PFL Liga, where you have a lot of very good goalkeepers, it's quite strange, to be quite honest, to see a side where the goalkeeping situation isn't sorted out. And at Radomlje, the goalkeeping situation really isn't sorted out. I think, you know, there's 23, I think they played 23 games in total this season, and no goalkeeper has played more than 9 of those, which isn't ideal. If they can sort the goalkeeping situation out and sort out their right flank, which I think is a particular weakness, then they have what it takes to stay up. But I think they have a little bit further to go than the others, because, you know, the other side in that mix are Alumni. And Alumni are a solid middle of the range Pure League side. You know, there isn't anywhere in that squad where you're thinking, okay, that's really poor. There isn't. And while they didn't start the season great, their form's improved as the season went on. They brought in Armin Jelic late in the transfer window, and Jelic has proven to be a bit of a star, to be quite honest. I don't think they're anything special by any means. I think if they finish the season eighth, that's probably about the ceiling of their potential achievement. But if you're talking about the floor of their potential achievement, that's also probably ninth. You know, they're mediocre, but they're no worse than that. And I would be surprised if they were to be relegated. I think, you know, if you wanted me to rate the relegation chances of those five, I think Celje are the least likely, then Domžale, then Tabor, then Alumni, Tabor Cezana, and Radomlje the most likely. But, you know, for Radomlje, for Alumni, for Tabor Cezana, you can very easily see, make an argument for them getting better in the second half of the season. Tabor Cezana, simply for having the familiarity of Kostić and having given him a chance to bring some creative players in. Alumni, because, you know, they're there because the first few games of the season was absolutely terrible. And Radomlje, because if they can improve defensively, then, you know, they really have a good chance. Moving up to the top five, and it's a bit skewed is the best word to use, because Olympia, who had a COVID outbreak, have two games in hand on everyone except Mura, who have one game in hand because one of the Olympia's cancelled games was against Mura. And I think really the only place to start would be at Mura. He says still thinking about it, because I don't want you to give the impression I actually plan much about these podcasts. aside from the timeline podcasts are completely scripted, the ad hoc podcasts are completely ad hoc. Mura have obviously given us the moment of the season so far, beating Spurs in the Conference League, which was hilarious. It was amazing, and they absolutely deserved that result. Absolutely no way, shape or form should Mura be belittled in any way about beating a subpar Spurs squad. You know, yeah, Spurs weren't great. Mura were magnificent that night. And, you know, for a lot of the game in London, they were pretty damn good as well. The difference being that in Maribor, Mura didn't give away a stupid early goal, whereas in London they did. But they're fifth, which is not where you really want to be when you're the reigning champions. But I don't think it's a true reflection of their form. If we go through Mura's season, they lost their opening two games of the season. They've had 17 league games since and only lost twice. They've only lost one of the last 12. But they've also had 14 European games. So they've played. So when you throw in Europe, League and Cup, you're talking about 34 games since the start of July, which is a hell of a lot of games. You know, they have pretty much been playing, you know, Sunday, Thursday for 5 months. And that takes its toll. There's absolutely no doubt that that takes its toll. And when you look at the impact that's had on their league form, if you're talking about the games Mura have played directly after European games, they have dropped 21 points. Now, for the rest of the season, you're taking that distraction away from them. And you have to kind of make the argument that they wouldn't have dropped 21 points if they didn't have European games. So, there's, while they may be 10 points behind Maribor at the top, I think it's very difficult to make an argument against Mura. It's a big gap for them to try and eat up, but I think the reason that gap's there is because of how well they've done, quite perversely. You know, they are draw heavy, but they're so difficult to beat. I think Simunza, Ante Simunza, assuming he remains at the club, he's been linked to Ludogorets in Bulgaria. I think that one's sort of gone quiet, and I don't really blame him. The situation at Ludogorets has been volatile, to say the least, this year. I think if he has any sense, he wouldn't go. He's managed to get career bests out of Zankarničnik and Tommy Horvat, who've played every game this season. They've missed Luka Popočarnec, who has been injured for the vast majority of this season so far. He came back properly in the final game of the autumn against Kaper, where he assisted and scored. They have a ridiculous amount of depth in attack. Obviously, you've got Mitrolotric, Nadim Malahustjanovic, Mihal Klepec, Amadej Marosha, Kai and Tio Šipov, Zanska Fleck. Yeah, there's a lot there. Not just in terms of depth, but in terms of options and in terms of energy. And when you're talking about them playing a very flexible style of football, I think, you know, as we've seen, Zankarničnik was not originally a centre-back. Žigakos is not originally a midfielder. Clemens Sturm, Clemens Pucho, not originally midfielders, but they've been pressed into action in those roles this season. He sort of evolved his fullbacks into very different players. That's made Mura much harder to beat, much harder to predict. And we know they are a very good pressing side. We know they force sides into mistakes. And we know, you know, when you have guys like Popočarnec, when you Horvat, Lotrich, and Klepac, and Skoflek as well, if you give them space outside the box, they have the ability to really punish you. That gap of 10 points to Maribor, is it big enough for Maribor to safely say, you know, ooh, we don't really have to think about Mura? I don't think so. It wouldn't surprise me if Mura just absolutely go on a tear in the spring if that side's kept together. And certainly Zankarničnik has been linked with moves elsewhere. But to where exactly, I don't think anyone's particularly clear so far. Directly above Mura, 1 point up, are Bravo. Now, I think most people probably know my opinion on Bravo is that they're great. Dejan Gravic is a fantastic manager. If he finishes the season, then he's been at the club for 5 years, which is in stark contrast to the managerial situation at their neighbours in Ljubljana. But more than anything, you know, each of those 5 years has seen a consistent improvement of the squad and of the side. You know, there were reasons to be concerned about Bravo this season. David Recaro went to, Viking in Norway. Igor Vekic went to Portugal. Mustafa Nukic, who scored and assisted loads last season, went to Olympia. And what Gravic did was bring in Renato Josipovic in goals on loan from Dinamo. He's absolutely fantastic and looks like potentially the equal of Vekic. They have the best defensive record in the league. And you have sort of a bit part player in Amar Memic, brought in from the Bosnian second tier, but who's assisted every 160 minutes. He's continuing to get better form out of Sandy Ogrinec and Martin Kramaric. You know, their tactic is, you know, very much picking up younger players and bringing them on, and it keeps on working. Yes, they are the lowest scorers in the league, but they're also the best defensive side in the league. And with them being the lowest scorers in the league, it comes with a caveat that in each of the past two seasons, Dejan Gravic has brought in a striker on loan in the winter. We have Milan Tucic last season, who scored 10. Roko Baturina the season before, who scored 8. It seems, you know, you would be ignoring the form book to think that Bravo wouldn't bring in a goal scorer in the winter. And if they are able to do that, you know, I don't necessarily think they will push for the title, but they can certainly push for the top three. When you consider Mura are already quite a way back from that little mix, when you consider Olympia are sort of, and when you consider Copair, which we will in a moment, there's an opportunity for Bravo to push into European places. I think they're an ambitious side. I think, you know, maybe next season we might be looking at them as title contenders. If not next season, the season after. There's momentum that they will become one of the elite sides in Slovenia. But I think this season's too early for them. Olympia. Olympia. Olympia, as you may well be aware, got sold this October. Milan Mandarić sold them to a German consortium led by Adam Delius, who promptly didn't do much because Olympia then had a COVID outbreak in the squad, which meant they didn't play much. As such, they're a bit of a puzzle of a side. But they are, they do have the highest XG in the league. Only Mura have a lower XGA. So there's plenty of reasons to expect that they will pick up, because, you know, if we talk about, we mentioned Celje should have scored 11 more than they have. Olympia should have scored 14 more than they have in two fewer games. So that's sort of very Olympia, really, isn't it? They have, I think, possibly the best player in the league in Almedin Zilicic, who, you know, came in for a decent fee by the standards of Slovenian football, and has worked his way straight into the Bosnian international side. I think he is everything Georgi Ivanovic last season should have been. And wasn't. He's consistent, he has consistent threat, he's very, very, very good. And if he goes somewhere for more money in the summer, I would not be surprised. Dino Skender came back as manager and made the side harder to beat, trying to fix the ruthlessness of the side bringing in Marko Futac. But, you know, once he sort of brought those things in, then COVID stopped Olympia playing and took them any sort of momentum that Skender could bring up at the in the squad, took it away. At the same time, it's probably been quite lucky because, you know, just before that COVID outbreak, Timo Makšeljsnik got injured and was going to miss the rest of the autumn. So they have sort of skipped the period of not having their best midfielder by not having anyone available. I'm not going to sit here and argue that Olympia are going to win the title. The reason for that is because they are Olympia, and because I have far too much experience of what Olympia are like to have any confidence in them actually doing something and not having any craziness happen. But sort of the timing of the COVID thing and of a Elsnick thing, and in giving Skender a bit more time to work with the squad before, you know, really hitting into severe league duty, they might just have someone looking out for them. It's a bit of luck they don't often get, if one could describe a COVID outbreak as good luck. Why not? I think they have a chance, but, you know, they're Olympia. I'm not going to have any confidence that they're going to stay sane for long enough to actually do something. Which leads us to the top two. In second, we have the side that no one really expected to be second at the start of the season, which is Copair. Now, they are very potent, they are very leaky, but they get results. They only dropped 2 points in the first 8 games, which, you know, obviously is a very good record. Didn't win either of the next 4. And I think at the end of that little run, you were probably thinking, okay, that's them done now. Sort of going back to the form you expected them to have. And then they closed the autumn out with 5 games unbeaten, which included games against Bravo and Mura. So they seem to have staying power, which is surprising. I think it's mainly due to their attacking setup. Max Barisic has been absolutely fantastic this season, but he has been given very much a free role. You know, he can play in the centre. he can play on both flanks, but when he's on, he's constantly moving around, he's turning up in different channels, and he's effective from all of those channels. Not only that, you have guys like Kaheem Paris, Bede Asuji, Lamine Cully, who are all physical. You know, they are all good runners and good workers. So that if Barisic either isn't an option or is moved into an area of the pitch where he may have the ball but can't do anything directly himself, there's always someone for the attack, for the midfield and the defence to hit, be it with short balls or long balls. But the rest of the side definitely isn't a title contending side by quite a margin. You know, Zanzuchek is the best defender that they have, but he's, you know, one of the more defensively minded defenders they have. You know, Palcic and Brucic are good on the wide areas of the defence, but they are attack minded players. The midfield is generally bypassed, and that's for a reason. Could they win the title? If they were to do it, I think they would have to add two good midfielders and probably a good defender this winter. I don't think the secret is out about them so much as to indicate that they will be losing any of their attacking talent this winter. Barisic is, you know, Barisic has looked absolutely fantastic, but you know, he's come to Coppera off the back of really just bubbling around the bottom of Italian football. And I think people have still put a lot more stead into that part of his CV than the last 18 months, where he's been very, very good, particularly when, you know, he's not, it's not like he's 22. You know, he is, we'll just have to double check, but he is, you know, 26. So, you know, he's in his prime now. And I don't think clubs are going to really come sniffing around him unless he, you know, maintains it the whole season. Which leaves us with Maribor. Maribor are solid. They're reliable. If you were to go to the dessert table, Maribor would be a fruit salad. That's not an insult. Because in the land of the lactose intolerant, the fruit salad is king. They are certainly not the best side in the league. Mura have played them twice and beaten them twice. Olympia have played them twice, won one and drawn one. But they're reliable. You know, they win the games they're meant to win against the sides below them, which is a real talent in and of itself. Because, you know, Mura, obviously, we've discussed, have dropped so many points after their European games. And, you know, those points weren't just against big sides. They were against, you know, they were against the Illuminis and Taurus Azanas of this world. Olympia aren't the most reliable. And Coppère are, you know, Coppère have been fantastic, don't get me wrong. But no one expected them to be in this particular fight. And if Maribor can just sort of keep ticking over at sort of like 1.9 points a game, that they're doing, that may well be enough to actually win the title, because, you know, you're relying on, if we obviously, if Olympia were to win their two games in hand, then they're on 37 points, which brings them to within 2 points of Maribor. If that was the case, if that was to actually happen, then you'd probably be thinking Olympia are the most likely. I think, you know, they have just that bit more about them, that bit more quality than Maribor do. If Olympia don't do that, then, you know, we're talking about a 5-point gap to the next big team. And that might be enough if you consider that you have your main rivals in Olympia as quite unreliable and your other main rivals in Mura as quite a way off. Ognjen Mudrinski has been fantastic. Nino Zagel has been fantastic. They are reliable, they are settled, and that might just be all they need. Simon Rosman was tasked with giving the club an identity they've been searching for a couple of seasons. He didn't find it and pay the price for that with his job. What Radovan Karanovic has been able to do is find that the club doesn't necessarily need a personality, they just need to do the basics right. And that might be all that's required. So, as always, we've an interesting title race in Slovenia. When do we ever not? I think it's been a really fun half season. I think we've probably seen the best goal we'll see scored in Europe all season from Gazina. Do go and find that out if you've not seen that one already. Please do. And then share it like crazy. Because that's the thing. That's the whole thing. If you've not read, I did put an article up this past weekend about the promotability of Slovenian football, sort of from a business perspective, in reaction to a piece that was put on Nogomania by Mitja Viler late last week. Obviously, Slovenian clubs do a lot of things right, but they don't really shout from the rooftops. They don't really make themselves as accessible as they could be. When you consider ultimately they're only putting things out in a language that only people within the borders of Slovenia speak, in the nicest way possible. Love you, Slovenian fans. And it's a pity that there aren't more eyes in the Slovenian league, because the past two seasons you've had the title decided on the final day by the top two teams in games between the top two sides. That's ridiculous. Where else does that happen? Nowhere else. So as such, it has to be, you have to accept that it has an incredible entertainment value. Unfortunately, it's an incredible entertainment value that isn't played out in the stands. Mura and Radomlje are the only two sides in the league where over 25% of the ground's capacity is actually used. And even then, you can sort of discount Radomlje because their capacity is only 1,200. Olympia, obviously they have the biggest stadium in the country, have average capacity of 7%. And I find it's quite difficult to promote a game where you're going to go and you know there's not really going to be much of an atmosphere, because ultimately you're fitting 1,500 people into a stadium that's 10 times the size of it. And you have that issue both at Stasice and at Ludzki Wirt. I think even when Mura played Vitesse in the Conference League, we're talking about a side who are playing away from home because of UEFA regulations. It's only an hour away, guys. It's not that much of a hardship. But, there were only maybe 4,000 at that game. I've not checked. But, it was very obvious when you were watching the broadcast that stadium wasn't anywhere near full. And, ultimately, I think one of the most important things when you're actually trying to sell a product, a sporting product, is that when you're able to watch it, you're able to watch a lot of people looking like they're having a good time, not very few people looking like they're in a bit of a library. And ultimately, that's going to stymie the growth of this game in Slovenia. Because football, the domestic league, really does deserve to be part of the national conversation of sports within there. The Slovenian sport shouldn't just be some incredible cyclists, a few skiers, and Luka Doncic. You should be having that conversation about Maribor and Olympia and getting the focus on them. And I realise I've gone way off track now, but I'm not going to be brought back. But you can't beat this blooming league for entertainment value and story value over a season. You think what season 4 of Drive to Survive is going to be like with Lewis and Max, then what I'd remind you is the Slovenian League has been like that the past two seasons, and looks like it's going to be pretty similar to that this season as well. And 4 seasons ago, it was like that. It consistently delivers in entertainment. And let's talk about it more. Let's not have it just be me. I do enough. Thank you. There is one other league at the moment which has a finish up for the winter, which is the Bosnian Premier League. I will be entirely honest, I haven't watched as much of that as I should have this season. So we'll very quickly touch upon it. Zrinjski are running away with it. 12 points clear of Tuzla City, who started the season very impressively. I think I have a couple of players in the national side. Mention that in one moment. Borac, the reigning champion, started atrociously, but have climbed back into third. But they're, you know, 18 points behind Zrinjski, with FK Sarajevo a whole 20 points behind Zrinjski in fourth. Sorry, which, you know, again, I think with Borac and with Borac, he had an extremely poor start to the season. With Sarajevo, had a poor start to the season also. But I think what you're seeing there is the impact of sort of financial issues that they had over the summer, which led to, you know, really a weaker side put together than really they expected. I think there are some, when you go through their squad, I think there are some decent players in there that you will know. Riyad Kobilya, who was very good at Rudi Voleni back in the day, and Ricky Kapic, who obviously is at Sarajevo, I think, for his second spell, but was exceptional at Sheriff Tiraspol last season. But yes, I mean, they are way off it, albeit, you know, sort of recovered form a bit in the mid-autumn, but then rounded off the autumn with a loss away to Suroki Brieg and then losing at home to Veles Mostar, which isn't great. Just quickly skipping through the rest of the league. Suroki Brieg are 5th, 27 points. Zelyes Nikar, 6th, 26. Sloboda Tuzla in 7th at 24. Velez in 8th at 21. Rudar Prijedor. So after Velez, then you take a real drop down. Rudar Prijedor, Posušje, and Leitar are all on 16 points, separated by goal difference. And then Radnik Bielina are bottom on 12. Yes, I won't think too much on them, but because really, let's be quite honest, that league's done. Zrinjski are absolutely miles clear. They've scored 42, so that's 9 more than anyone else in the league, and conceded only 8, which is 8 fewer than anyone else in the league, which, given this is generally quite a particularly low-scoring league, if you're a long-term follower of the Bosnian League, yeah. Can sort of see why they may win this title at an absolute canter, particularly when, you know, you consider that Tuzla City, the side in second, were a side you probably only expected maybe to get into, you know, fourth or fifth at the start of this season, and you know, really, I think only came through thanks to sort of adding things in attack over the summer. But yes, anyway. Let's leave that to one side. We will, of course, be doing one on Croatia. We will be doing one on Serbian Superliga as well in the coming period. I don't know exactly when that's going to be, mainly because I've started a new job on this end and I'm busy. I've sort of snuck this into an unexpected hour that I had after a meeting that I was meant to have after work. Turned out not to happen. So, yes, there is stuff coming. In terms of timeline episodes, they probably will resume next year, now in 2022, if you're listening to this far in the future, and if you are, I'm not sure why. This is probably a lot less relevant, but yes, we'll be bringing those in. So the next one has been completely scripted and everything, and I'm doing the one after, which is proven to be a bit of a behemoth. But I think it will be using the festive period to get ahead of myself on writing, so we can start off with a decent flow of episodes come the new year. That's my New Year's resolution, to actually consistently schedule things. Good luck. So yes, as always, I need to say thank you very much for listening. I suspect this won't be the last podcast before Christmas itself. But I'll take this opportunity to wish you all a merry, merry Christmas wherever you are. Sharing is caring. So if there is anything you, anyone you think would be interested in me rambling for 50 minutes, which is a surprise that even you are the listener, then obviously do let them know. Reviews on various podcast platforms of choice, so things like that. You know the script. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your Christmases, and I will catch you next time.